enough. So that's all that happened in this past hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're getting ready for... It's all yours.
It's 7 o'clock. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario.
And Sean, you know, we're looking at what's happening today, 5th of May. And the 5th of May is Red Dress Day.
And
you mentioned about that walk that was going on when we started here at Aboriginal Voices here at CFRC. But that was in Belleville, so they were going to be ending up. Let's hope they didn't have any rain for their walk. No, we didn't look that.
We didn't bother.
But that's not the only place things are happening, you know, because, you know, when we first, you and I first got involved in the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls projects, that it was 2014. Do you remember that far back? 11 years, well.
I remember.
12 years ago now.
And I don't remember in detail.
No. But we had assistance from Four Directions, elder in residence, Betty. And Betty kind of guided us a little bit. You know, then you went home and talked, and I went home and talked. And, you know, in my family, there are three generations of women. And so I was able to ask advice from each generation. What we should be looking at. You know, originally when we started our Stolen Sisters project, it was, you know, kind of started off because somebody mentioned about the Red Dress Project and I hadn't heard anything about it. And so we started looking into it. And I remember talking with you one evening and saying, what are we going to do? How long are we going to spend? Probably two 15-minute segments, one week and one the next. Turned out it just became a story that had no end. And we ended up with 8 half-hour segments in total over several weeks, months, I guess it was. But one of the things that I did do was we weren't doing... emails back and forth because I didn't have an email for Jamie Black, who was the artist who started the Red Dress Project idea. And she kept telling me this is a redress.
So, a redress?
Redress, yeah.
I seem to remember that at one point in our journey, there was a young person who was putting a red dresses up in the park up there.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about the same thing? Anyways, at some point, somebody stole them.
Okay. Olivia, that was her name. She was a grade 9 student. She had stitched a poem into the dress, and she hung it out in the park near where she lived. And... you know, a grade 9 student, you do this project, you show it at school. What are you going to do with it? Well, you hang the red dress out and let people read the poem. Right. 2 days later, she went out to look at it in the morning on the way to school. It was gone.
Somebody stole it.
Well, remember she came in and talked to us one night? She sat in the Don Ross studio.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Very impressive speaker.
Not in detail, but I do remember. And yeah, it's unfortunate. Not sure, was the culprit ever found?
No, but she hoped that somebody actually took it and used it to wear it, and who needed a dress.
Oh.
Okay. So that was how she left it. But it'd be interesting to find out.
And what is she doing now?
That's a good question. That's what I was just going to say. I wondered about that yesterday when we cut. Planning out today's show, and I wondered would it be kind of interesting to have her come in and talk about
what other activism is she up to now?
That's right. Anyway, so we'll see what happens. Now, we have an interview with Jamie Black, but that'll be in about 15 minutes or 20 minutes.
Alrighty.
So I wasn't sure whether you wanted to hear a few more women singing. So there
sure.
Because we're going across Canada. We've had Susan A. Clark from the far north in Toronto, Kaylee Cardinal from Western Canada, Tara Williamson, and, you know, I was thinking, okay, we could do either Twin Flames, because that, you know, Chelsea June is Algonquin, and so they're from the sort of near Ottawa area, and with her husband, Yahi, who is from the Quebec side of the Inuit. So, you know, we could do that. But I was just looking back to a little, well, we'll come back to this. So I'll go and find, just for you, those So do you want to do Twin Flames first?
Sure, let's do Twin Flames first.
Twin Flames is Porch Light and Friends, two songs.
I leave the porch light on just in case. Open that door swings and I see your face and I. How will I even
run? And I keep your photograph to this day, wishing and hoping that you're okay. And I'm missing you now.
I'm never happy down I have it. It's a wrong a till it all our way. Then a wrong a and it a corner away. The wrong a was the same. Love remains. All this hurts inside me. Call your name to this day. Wish you were home beside me. Left your bedroom in its place. Posters and memories unerased. And I how will I even
standing in the doorway. I hold back my tears. Seems just like yesterday, although it's been years. And I'm missing you now.
I'm never gonna be down, I have it. Kids are gonna tell it all our way. Soon I'm gonna end it all, corner of it. The home was the same. Love remains. All this hurts inside me. Call your name to this day. Wish you were home beside me. On just in case, open that door swings and I see your face and I. How will I even run? I leave the porch light on just in case, open that door swings and I see your face and I.
Zeltsunga, Alayimunga, Hadigalo, Aningwa, Tsuta. Oh, oh, oh. Belsasunga, Yakaibunga, Ilanakalo, Pingua, Tsuta. Oh, oh. Friends, they are standing behind me right until the end, right until the end. Friends, I have got my friends, they are standing beside me right until the end, right until the end. Hadika nunagane bengutaka kingo mananinye unga vunga lanaka nunagane ikaivaka dasi.
My name is Genevieve, and I'll be hosting Peace, Love, and Jenny on CFRC 101.9 FM on Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. We'll be exploring everything from pop and soul to funk, jazz, and even a touch of hip-hop. Music that spans decades but all connects through good vibes, peace and love, and of course, a little bit of me, Jenny. See you there!
This Mother's Day, Sunday, May 10th, from 10:30 a.m. till 4 p.m., join AWEC, the All-Women Entrepreneurship Circuit, for a curated spring pop-up market at the TED Center, featuring more than 30 incredible female-owned brands and local makers. From handcrafted gifts to unique finds you won't see anywhere else, it's the perfect place to shop with intention and treat the moms and mother figures in your life.
Saturday mornings. Whether you're waking up in a stranger's apartment or enjoying some time with the family, you need a nutritional breakfast for your ears. So join me, DJ Over Easy, for Making Bacon every Saturday morning from 8 until 10 on CFRC 101.9 and CFRC.ca.
Cool if you could volunteer with Canada's oldest campus radio station? Well, sign up to volunteer with CFRC 101.9 FM today. We're always looking for new volunteers and we offer a free training program, so no experience in radio production is necessary. You can start your own radio show or podcast, contribute to our news collective, help us sort through music sent to us by record labels and artists, help plan events, record PSAs for us, and even more. Reach out to our programming manager, Alex Fernandez, via email at programs@cfrc.ca for more information, or visit our website at cfrc.ca/volunteer and sign up today.
I'm Carolyn, host of Our Stolen Sisters, listening to the voices from our community. In our series, we've invited community leaders, support workers, students, and politicians to share experiences surrounding this complex issue. We also plan to share ideas for you, the listener, to select a personal action to highlight the issue of our stolen sisters. Your action, large or small, will help to improve the lives of women and children in Canada. Jamie Black is an artist who has spent the last 5 years exploring the issue of missing and murdered Aboriginal women and is trying to express her ideas through art. We will now join Douglas and Jamie in a telephone interview.
I have on the telephone with me Jamie Black, who is an artist from right now living in Winnipeg. Hi, Jamie. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks.
And I was looking at your website. So you maintain a very interesting website, and it's called Redress. And I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit about the name and what's it all about.
So the Redress Project, or Redress Project, I use that title because it means both the red dresses, which are integral part of the exhibition, but also redress is a legal term that means to put right or wrong. So the project is also about redressing violence against Indigenous women. So what the project looks like is I've collected red dresses and I hang them empty in public spaces. So if you can imagine hundreds of empty red dresses, and what those dresses do is they mark the absence of so many Indigenous women across our country who have died because of violence against them. And I've been traveling with that project for quite a number, probably about 4 years now. And I traveled to different universities, mostly, and also some galleries, where I kind of engaged the student population and other passerby and the public around the issue of violence against Aboriginal women.
And so what sort of reaction do you get from the student bodies?
Well, people, first of all, when they see, you know, our installation art has a way of catching people's attention. It's something you don't normally see in public space. A red dress hanging, and I think that people first and foremost have kind of a visceral emotional reaction to the fact that these dresses are empty, and they begin to wonder where the people that inhabited them are right off the bat. So the installation works in that way, first of all, and then people become curious and they want to know the story behind the installation, and that opens up kind of a gateway to educate people around the high rates of violence that Aboriginal women are experiencing. So,
and you said you traveled to a number of universities. Could you name a few of them?
I was just recently at the University of Saskatoon, the University of Saskatchewan, I believe it is, in Saskatoon. I've done a show at the University of Regina in Edmonton, one in Kamloops, and several other places.
So what's it like then with going to, mostly in Western Canada right now, but going from Saskatchewan, and what's the impact been for people in British Columbia?
Well, it's very different. I've noticed just the kind of culture around Indigenous people, and kind of the public opinion around Indigenous people changes depending on where you are. So you have to come at the conversation from different perspectives and from different angles to allow people, you know, the chance to start thinking about and be open to thinking about violence against Indigenous people. For example, you know, some places people have no understanding at all of what Aboriginal women are facing, and they don't understand that Aboriginal women face higher rates of violence than any other cultural group in Canada. So, for example, at that time, I would you know, begin the conversation there, whereas in other places, there's a very deep understanding of the violence Aboriginal women are facing, and in those communities, we start conversations from a different place. A place of kind of more understanding of the issues. So.
And so what kinds of issues do you bring out as you get talking? I assume you're talking about social justice issues?
Yeah, definitely. I like to bring in the voices of whatever communities that I'm part of. So what I often do, especially working with universities, is bring in community groups, you know, Aboriginal student groups, different groups of people to either have panel discussions. I've had families talk about their experience, you know, living their loved ones, which is really difficult, but very important, I think, to have their voices heard in the conversation as well. And, you know, a lot of people who, you know, may not interact with Aboriginal issues are often in the room when families are talking just because of this art project that they were interested in. So suddenly there are people in a room together that may not have been together before. So it really creates an opportunity for people to learn about other people's experiences.
And you said you have a child in school, and what's the impact been on you in your family, and what kind of conversations have you had with your kids?
Well, I constantly kind of, we try hard to have our kids interact with different groups of people. They've gone to protests, and they've gone to different communities in northern Manitoba and Nunavut, and we travel around and spend time with communities in different places. And I think that really gives them an opportunity to see different ways that people live and different issues that people day to day that they may not face in their own lives, and really just gives them a broader perspective in creating community and hopefully being interested and pursuing social justice as something they may want to do in the future.
Mm-hmm. So they get a chance to see the impact that you have on people when you bring your installation or when you bring a conversation to the community.
Yeah, that's right.
Another question I have for you, Jamie, is that I'm thinking what got you started on thinking about probably looking at that one red dress, and how many did you think you were going to be able to put together to put into a show or an installation, and then where did it go once you got the first five or six?
I bought five or six dresses, and I was just kind of playing around with them aesthetically outdoors, hanging them in different places and taking photographs. And my original idea was for this to be a guerrilla art project, actually. I wanted to gather as many dresses as there were missing women. So at the time, I think the number was around 600, which it's known to be much higher than that now. But I had imagined gathering as many dresses as there were women and bring them on the Parliament grounds in Ottawa. And that was kind of my original idea. So I have now gathered by public donation, over 300 red dresses. And I don't quite have the number I was planning on getting, but the installations are quite tricky, and I find that each dress really has a huge impact. So even 100 dresses can have a very big impact.
And as I mentioned to you before we got on air, that some of the listeners to Aboriginal Voices here at CFRC and to CFRC Radio in Queens have contributed. We have four right now. So would it be okay if we requested a few more?
Yeah, that's wonderful. You could request donations of dresses. Sure, I'm still collecting them.
We'll give our address, and people can send it to CFRC, and we'll collect them, and then I can email and send you the information. And we'll send off the four that we do have in the next little while. I'm thinking that this is a project we could try and get you to come to Queen's University. So we're in conversation about that. Would you be willing to come to Queen's if we could get some students involved in helping you get set up and organized and giving you a venue to talk to students?
Yeah, I'm always open to being invited to show the work. And I've been, like I said, I've been doing this for 4 years, and I don't foresee stopping anytime soon. If people continue to invite me, it's really exciting, and it keeps the conversation open and really creates some bridges between communities. So I think it's very important work to do.
Well, we'll work on that, and we'll let our listeners know about that in the future as we get rolling through the, well, it'll be 2015, and so hopefully we can, end of February, early March, something like that, we can arrange something. We'll be in contact with you on that one. One other question that I have is about other issues that that you think are important for us to be talking about with our listeners here on this project. Our Stolen Sisters, Listening to the Voices from the Community is the title of this project. And what sort of ideas do you think people should be looking at, other than just looking at these women are missing? What else should they be digging into?
Well, I think that probably I don't work on the front lines of community organizations. I have done work like that, but I think the voices we need to hear from most are you know, the voices from people working with women who are experiencing violence, because they know best what steps need to be taken to address the problem on a real, on the ground kind of way. I'm not a counselor, and I'm not directly involved with, you know, women who are experiencing violence on a daily basis. So I think that it's those voices that need to be heard, and they can give a clearer idea of the best direction to go in concretely addressing.
But you as an artist have a different way of having people think about this issue, and I appreciate all that you're doing, because you have created a huge conversation around us getting this project off the ground, and the impact is probably more than you really think about or know.
Yeah, it's really interesting, the different. I run into someone and we started talking, and we later realized that she was writing her PhD dissertation about the work that I was doing. So, you know, this work has impacts in so many different directions and in so many different ways that you can't really measure. You can't really measure it.
So did you have to spend time researching the information about missing Aboriginal women across Canada?
I did, and I got a lot of my information from Amnesty International, the study that they had done, and then also I consulted with community groups, and there's a woman here in Winnipeg who we kind of ran ideas by when I was first beginning this project, and she does a lot of activist work around missing women, and her own sisters has been missing for quite a long time. So we just wanted to make sure at the outset that we're making decisions around the work that were respectful to families. And
you started this at least 5 years ago, so was the information easy to find, or was it difficult to find the actual stats and all of the information that you needed to get started?
The Amnesty International information was fairly easy to access, but I would say that it was not completely accurate. I mean, there are small groups of people who, you know, there's a group of people who drive from Vancouver all the way to Ottawa every year around the issue of missing murdered women. I believe Gladys Radick is in charge of that group. And just basically the information I got from word of mouth was that on the ground from community organizations, that the number of missing women and murdered women was much, much higher than any of the so-called official reports that I was getting from different sources. So it really was piecemeal, and I know that there are certain community groups that took it upon themselves. I also got information from NWAC, the Native Women's Association of Canada, which has since dissolved because they had their funding pulled. But they were doing really important work around gathering statistics around violence against Aboriginal women. I don't know if their information is any longer accessible at this point. But it is. It's very scattered. It's not always accurate, because not every person who experiences, I think there's issues with people not getting a good reception from police, so maybe not every homicide or missing person is actually even reported to the police. So I think much like other statistics with violence against women, these things are not always reported. So I think that leaves us with a big question mark as to how frequent this is actually happening. So, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm just thinking about the title again, the Redress Project, and the image of all these red dresses. It's quite stunning. Actually, it's quite a stunning view. People could go to your website, and we'll give that in a little bit, and check out pictures from your project. I understand you were just in southwestern Ontario at an art gallery. I think it was in Woodstock.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And what was it like to take everything into an art gallery?
Well, we actually had the exhibition outdoors outside of the art gallery. So it's a fairly small town there. And we hung about 40 red dresses out in the main square in the middle of town. So I think it was something that the town had never really experienced public art before. And it's a mainly non-Indigenous population there. So I think it was interesting to... you know, have the work there had a, you know, different impact than it would in another space.
So what kind of conversations did you get into then?
Well, I guess I sort of felt like I should begin from the beginning and you know, I tell a lot of stories about that I gather along the way of doing this work. You know, the impact it has on people and that sort of thing. So, and also some statistics and to get people really thinking about and realizing that Aboriginal women, you know, because a lot of people will ask me, why isn't it about all women? Because yes, all women experience violence because they're women. Not only Aboriginal women experience violence. So people will ask me, why isn't it all women? And it's because, you know, Indigenous women face higher rates of violence than any other cultural group in our country. So I think that's, you know, that's the answer to why I'm specifically talking about Indigenous women.
Okay. And so was it cold when you were in Woodstock? Did you have lots of snow?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. but actually, I did feel quite cold there because it's very wet in Woodstock. And my feet were wet the whole week, so...
Yeah, it's a very different kind of weather pattern that we have in Ontario than you get out west.
It's very damp.
Well, actually, this past week and a half has been sort of up and down. We had a big snowstorm that plowed through and left lots of snow, but the temperature rises above zero, and then it is wet. So I understand what you're saying. Jamie, I'm going to leave the last word to you. I appreciate having you here on Aboriginal Voices on CFRC and part of our CFRC project. Jamie Black, I'm going to leave the last word to you. What advice would you give to some of the young people who are trying to do something like you and keep the conversation going?
Well, I would say keep going. Get in there and, like, get involved with community organizations and, you know, maybe specifically Indigenous-run community organizations, activist groups in your community, and if there isn't one, maybe start one. You know, find like-minded people in your community that are concerned around the same issues and you know, have your voices heard. And there's really no limit to... you know, if you can use your imagination, how you can get people thinking about the issues you're concerned with, and I feel like art is a really great medium. Maybe film, and there's lots of different ways to get people, you know, thinking and start creating community and creating allies.
And Jamie Black, Miigwech.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome.
Jamie Black's art project can be seen at her website, www.reddressproject.org. Her photographs of the dresses and contact information is on the site. That is www.reddressproject.org. Douglas, I heard Jamie Black stress that the voices we need to hear the most are frontline workers and those who are closely affected by a missing woman. I assume that would include social workers at hospitals, healthcare workers in the community, police counselors, Interval House, and community support programs. As you talked with people in the process of creating this radio series, what surprised you the most?
Well, I talked with many people to get a sense of the general public's knowledge of this issue and what resources might be out there to help. And when I talked to my brother, we chatted on the phone, and I was reminded that my mom was a co-founder of our sister's place. And it was sort of pause. Oh, yeah, I remember that. We talked a bit about it. So off I went, and I went to see my mom, and she's now in her 80s. And it was a long time ago for her that she actually took the large action that needs to happen in her community. And she wanted to help women and children who were in distress.
My own parents were separated. They had quite a few arguments, et cetera, and so on. And their separation came, which had quite an effect on myself and my sister and brother. So I'm getting past that now.
And you actually got started creating a My Sister's Place. What was My Sister's Place supposed to do?
To help women who had the similar problems that I did, being separated from their husband, and needed to get feeling good about themselves and being able to find work or train themselves to be able to go into the workforce.
And how did you go about getting it set up? Because you didn't do this with your own money. Did you have to go and do something to get started?
Actually, there was a stroke of luck. I was trying to raise money, trying to have people in the area become aware of it. A one-man situation, you might say, at the time. And somebody in Barrie who was with the government heard about it, heard about myself trying to do this, and made an appointment with me. And he had been trying to start something like this through the government. And so we got together, and he provided the money through the government, and away we went. And that's what the beginning was.
So did you buy a house?
Eventually. Oh, dear, you're taking me back a long way back. Oh, dear, we had a two-story house on the main street in Beaton. Or was it Alice? No, it had to be Beaton. It's a quiet place for people to come to.
And that was in...
Boy, it's taken me back a long way.
And that was in 1987 when you first started it. And it has it been going ever since?
As far as I know. It's in other people's hands now, but I have been told when I was more in retirement that people had still carried on and it was doing fine. You'd have to probably check in Beaton.
We'll go do that. Okay.
See if it's
anything else
there.
You'd like to say about My Sister's Place?
Oh, it's a great place to go if you need help. Because they take the children and they, if you need help to find work, they help to train you. I believe they help you with schooling as well if you haven't finished school, but I'm not sure at this point how far they'd advanced with that. Because with everything they tried to do positively, the government seemed to help them when they needed it, which was a great thing. We had a lot of good help from the government at the beginning. Apparently the man we were in touch with had been trying to get it started, get people interested. And he had quite a lot of trouble. And then here I was trying to get people interested in Beaton. And when he heard about it, we joined forces.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, darling.
Sego, we're here today at the Four Directions Aboriginal Student Center. And coming together, learning to drum, learning our songs, and it's an open drum circle, so anybody in the Queens community or Kingston community is welcome to attend.
Thank you for being a part of our series, Our Stolen Sisters, listening to the voices from our community. Today's program was created in collaboration with the Four Directions Aboriginal Student Centre and CFRC 101.9 FM. Special thank you goes to Betty Carr Bryant, Elder in Residence, Vanessa McCourt from the Four Directions Centre, and to Brenna Owen, Spoken Word Manager at CFRC. I'm your host, Carolyn. We wish to remind you of a few of the online resources that may be of interest in your understanding of the issue of missing and murdered Aboriginal women in Canada. Jamie Black's website can be found at www.reddressproject.org. Interval House website is www.kingstoninterhouse.com. And Kingston General Hospital website is www.kg.on.ca. Please join us again next week as we listen to the voices from our community with details about missing and murdered Aboriginal women in Canada. You might like to contact us at www.cfrc.ca or Four Directions Aboriginal Student Centre at www.queensu.ca/FDASC.
Oh, cry of the wild is the only way they can see. Oh, wolves don't live by the rules. Oh, wolves don't live by the rules. Oh, wolves don't live by the rules. Oh, wolves don't live by the rules.
Spring is in the air, which means it's time once again for the Banreef Foundation's annual spring celebration. Join us as we recognize the incredible achievements of mature women students at Queen's University. The festivities will take place at Grant Hall on May 2nd at 2 p.m. This is a free event and everyone is welcome to attend. Find event details by visiting the Banreef Center website, following us on Instagram or Facebook, or emailing brc@queensu.ca. Come celebrate exceptional women with us. See you there.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Revolving Door on CFRC 101.9 FM. My name is Liam. I'll be your host tonight. And again, this show